Hello, awesome humans, and welcome to today's episode of the Awesome Human Podcast. I'm Natalie, your host, and I'm so grateful you're here. As a quick reminder, we record this podcast with a live virtual audience, so you will hear me respond to questions and comments. If you'd like to join me for Awesome Human Hour Live, I would love it. It's every Wednesday at noon Eastern, and you can sign up by going to happier.com and clicking on Awesome Human Hour. Now, before we dive into today's topic, just take a moment to arrive to this moment right now. This time is for you, and I hope you find today's episode really valuable. Welcome, everyone, to our first Awesome Human Hour of 2023. I'm getting used to saying the year. Are you? I've been writing 2022 everywhere. This usually happens for the entire month of January, but I'm getting used to saying 2023. So welcome to the first Awesome Human Hour and the Awesome Human Podcast of 2023. So grateful that we all get to gather, although I do have to be honest with you all and tell you that it's, you know, that beginning, that first week of January after vacation. And this morning I was like, what? I have to do Awesome Human Hour? I don't have my stuff together yet. But we're here, and I'm sharing this because if you're feeling kind of all over the place this week or overwhelmed, you are not alone. It's normal. We're all, it's a transition. Transitions are hard. So welcome to everyone who is here with us on Zoom. Welcome to everyone listening on the recording or as a podcast. I'm really excited to begin the year with this particular session. And our topic today is all about the power of authenticity and love. And in a few minutes, I'll be joined by my friend and an incredible journalist and the author of this incredible new book that I'm about halfway through. It's called The Family Outing. And Jesse Hample, if you were part of our awesome human day when my book came out last year, you got an amazing sneak peek into Jesse. She interviewed me. So we're going to turn the tables. Jesse runs the Hello Monday podcast for LinkedIn. For 20 years, she's written for every major publication. And she wrote this incredible memoir, which is about coming out, but it's also about love and the power of becoming our authentic selves. So Jesse will be here in a few minutes. And I'm really, really, it's a treat for all of you who have an opportunity to listen. Jesse is a true awesome human. And this book and what she's, the theme she talks about, I think, are such a beautiful way to begin the year. So that's what we're going to focus on today. But we are going to begin the year and this awesome human hour and this Wednesday, which for me outside of Austin is very rainy, by doing what we always do. I want you to take a moment and think about something that you appreciate about yourself. And I want you to complete the sentence. Today, I'm an awesome human because. Today, I'm an awesome human because. And if you are here with us on Zoom, please put your responses in chat. This way you can inspire everyone else. If you are listening or watching the recording, you can just pause and say the response to yourself. You can always post it on YouTube or Facebook. I love to see them there. But as a reminder, and as we begin the year, and actually I'm going to spend a little time, I want to talk about this. I think it's really, really important in this time of freshness and newness and setting goals to begin in a place of appreciation. And if you follow me on Instagram, you saw what I did this year for my little beginning of year ritual. And if you don't follow me on Instagram, you should. I'm a good follow. My teenage daughter says that. So teenagers, screenagers, she must be right. I'm Natalie Kogan on Instagram, one word. So if you saw what I shared is I did something very different this year. Instead of kind of setting intentions or anything like that, I made two lists, and I share this in the Happier email as well. I made two lists. The first list I made was things for which I am proud of myself for this past year, for 2022. And then I made a list of things that I want to see on my proud of myself list for 2023. And I have to tell you, that was such a life-affirming way to think about goals for this year. So I share this in the Happier email. I share this on Instagram for much more detail. You can go there. And I think I wrote in one of those places that I shared this with my daughter, Mia, and she said it really resonated with her. She went and wrote her list of things she wants to be proud of herself for in 2023. So, you know, there's something there if an 18-year-old runs and does exactly what her mom just suggested. So I say this because I think it is really easy in our hectic lives, in our world that is constantly kind of focusing on external things, external achievements that we can see in ourselves and in others, I think it's really important to begin in a place of inner reflection about things you appreciate about yourself, things you are proud of yourself for, because that is actually the fuel that helps you to grow more, to do better. And so I think it's really, really empowering. So I'm offering you that as kind of a way to begin the new year, but it's also why we always begin these awesome human hours by taking a moment and completing the sentence, today I'm an awesome human because, and it's the awesome and the human, by the way. I always want to remind you this, it's awesome and the human. So a lot of people, when I do this, especially when I do this with my speaking audiences, often people say, oh my God, I can't think of anything. And what I encourage you, if you feel that way, by the way, if you felt that way when I ask you to do it, there's nothing wrong with you. We're all really good at criticizing ourselves. We have this negativity bias. We focus on the negative in our environment and in ourselves. And so it's a practice. It's a practice to recognize something good in yourself. But please remember, this isn't about epic things you've done. This is about both the awesomeness and the humanness. So I love seeing all your responses in chat. I hope that if you are here live with us on Zoom, you take a peek at chat. It's affirming to see what other people appreciate about themselves. It encourages us to see that within ourselves as well. And thank you to those of you who mentioned you saw my posts on Instagram or in the happier email. You're making your proud of yourself lists. I love that. It's, as you know, one of the big themes of my work is the practice of self-acknowledgement and self-appreciation and self-compassion, from which is the foundation that allows us to do all the wonderful things we all want to do. So before we dive in with Jesse, and again, if you're just joining us, welcome. You are never late to Awesome Human Hour. We are going to be talking about the power of authenticity and love today with the author of this amazing new memoir, The Family Outing, and my friend, Jesse Hampel, who will be joining us in a few moments. But I want to a couple announcements. So first, and this is probably my most important one, is I am doing a bonus Awesome Human Hour next week, January 11th. And the whole Awesome Human Hour is going to be dedicated to helping you create your mini self-care plan for the year. This was something that I also posted about. I love my Instagram family because I learn from you guys what's really useful, and then I can expand it and enhance it. I don't make New Year's resolutions. If you want to talk about why, you can ping me. I don't think that's useful, but I think fresh starts are really powerful. When there's a fresh start, New Year, Monday, your birthday, and it was my birthday on December 29th. Thank you to everyone who emailed me and replied to my email about it. I'll share a little bit about my celebration in a moment. But if when we have that kind of fresh start, it is easier for us to pick up or create a new habit, because a Monday or a birthday or a new year, it creates a separation a little bit between your past self and your current self, and allows your current self to say, okay, I didn't do this before, but I'm going to do this now. So instead of making resolutions, I want to guide you on creating your mini self-care plan for the year. So I decided to do a whole bonus Awesome Human Hour dedicated to that next week. You'll get a reminder email if you are registered for Awesome Human Hour. If you're not, just go to nataliecogan.com and you can register there. I'm going to send you a couple handouts in advance, and these will be actual drawings from my upcoming journal, the Awesome Human Journal. So you get a sneak peek as well, but you're actually going to have this little worksheet, this little template to create your mini self-care plan for the year, to think about things that fuel you, things that drain you, how to do more of what fuels you, how to do more of less of what drains you. So I'm really excited. I'm just offering it to you. This is my New Year's gift to the community. Next Wednesday, January 11th, same time. Please bring your colleagues, your teams, your friends, your family. I think it's one of the most important things we can do at the beginning of the year. So that's my big announcement. I'll see you all here next week. And thank you. Rhonda's saying my earrings dance. So these are, I got to celebrate my birthday this year in Colombia. I was very lucky. My family and I took a trip to Colombia over the holidays. We went to Medellin, which now forever has a piece of my heart. What an amazing, vibrant city of energy and love and color and art and food and so many awesome humans. And I speak pretty decent Spanish, not amazing Spanish. And they were all so kind. We made so many friends, even with my not perfect Spanish. And then we spent a couple days in Bogota, which is where, no, actually these earrings I think are from Medellin. And I have completely fallen in love with Colombia, especially with Medellin. Again, if you follow me on Instagram, I gave you lots of sneak peeks and photos. What an incredible place. If any of you have ever thought about going to Colombia, please go. Medellin, it's incredible. It's actually, I saw so many themes there that are core themes that we all talk about as part of Awesome Human Hour, themes of resilience and hope. You know, Medellin 20 years ago was the most dangerous city in the world. It was a city where people were getting killed in the streets every day. Drug cartel controlled it. And 10 years ago, it was awarded the most innovative city in the world award. And now it is this thriving and bursting and vibrant place. So this is my advertisement for encouraging you to go. It's an incredible, incredible place. So yes, that is where I celebrated my birthday. It was really fun to be in a different country on my birthday. And Colombians are so friendly that we usually hire local guides wherever we go just to get to know the place, like not just as tourists. And it was amazing. We'd had like 5 or 6 different guides by the time I had my birthday. And this is like the kind of warm humans that live in Colombia. They all called and emailed me on my birthday. They just met me the week before. So it was a really, really amazing place to be. Again, if you've ever thought about going to Colombia or Medellin and you're like, oh, but it's a dangerous place, it was epic. And it didn't hurt that the weather was 75 and sunny, 70, 75 and sunny every day. And every day in the weather app, it said it was going to rain, and it rained one time for half an hour. So very, very grateful. So thank you for indulging my continued excitement about Colombia. But again, the main announcement is next week on Wednesday, January 11th, I'm doing a bonus Awesome Human Hour dedicated to helping you make your mini self-care plan for the year. You'll get some really fun templates and handouts in advance, which are actually pages from my upcoming journal, the Awesome Human Journal, which I am submitting my final art for this week, which is very exciting. And then it is coming out. Many of you have pinged me to ask. It is coming out in October of 2023. I was going to say next year, but it's this year. All right. I actually meant to do this before Jesse joins us. I want to just read some of your Today I'm an Awesome Human because I love to read them. And then Jesse will be here and we'll dive in. All right. I'm picking these at random, by the way. I can't even see the names. There are so many. All right. Today I'm an awesome human because I am taking the time to attend the session and reboot my self-care. Awesome. Today, I'm an awesome human. Whoa, it's going too fast, you're adding. Because I made a decision about my future that I've been debating for at least the last 3 years. Congratulations, Elaine. Feels amazing to make a decision, right? I am an awesome human because I'm giving myself some patience while working to adjust and start fresh in the new year. Yes, Aaron, this is a really good thing for all of us, don't you think? A little bit of patience with ourselves and the world as we sort of all adjust into the new routine. I like it. That's great. I'm an awesome human because, oh, you guys are adding and it's moving. Because I am, I'm an awesome human because I'm celebrating volunteering for 47th year. Wow. My artistic talent on the Rose Parade float. That's amazing. That is so fun. All right, a couple more. Today I'm an awesome human because I am taking care of my special needs cat. Yeah, Kathy. Today I'm an awesome human because my word to work through this year after the recent passing of my husband is hope. I can do this because I know he's all around me and I'm hoping I can continue to gather the strength to take care of me through our love. Donna, that's really beautiful. Thank you. All right, one more. I love that you guys are adding as I'm reading. This is awesome. Today I'm an awesome human because I prioritize time to finally attend the session live after many months. Well, I'm so grateful to have you all here. And for all of you who have been coming a lot, for all of you who are here for the first time live, it's fantastic. Welcome. For the next week's special episode, so Laura, if you are here, you are registered. So once you register for Awesome Human Hour, you're registered for each of them. But there will also be a reminder email. Don't worry. We always remind you guys. You know that. We always, always, always remind you how you can join and how you can register. So zero worries. And let's see. Oh, I got a couple questions about this, so I want to answer. For those of you who get the happier email, which I hope is all of you, and if you don't get my weekly email for whatever reason, then all you have to do is go to nataliekogan.com and you can subscribe right there. But the week that I turned 47, and thank you, Debbie just put a link in chat as well to subscribe. So I turned 47 on December 29th, and to celebrate my birthday with our community this year, I decided to give away 47 copies of the Awesome Human Project, and I put a link to the giveaway. And to enter the giveaway, all you have to do is write a short essay. Oh my God, another December 29th person. Susan, that's exciting. That is awesome. Happy almost birthday, just slightly belated. So I put a link to enter the giveaway in the happier email this week, and I sent a special email about it that day. And so for those of you who have entered and have asked me when we'll be announcing winners, I'm asking for your patience. There's a lot of amazing entries, we will let you know. So I just want to respond to that. We have all your responses. If you got the happier email this week, there's still time to enter. So you don't have to stress if you missed it. So I just wanted to answer because I got so many emails about it earlier today. I wanted to answer you guys and make sure you knew the timing. All right, I'm hoping Jesse will be here. I'm just checking my email to make sure nothing is funky. Zoom was being funky yesterday. I know that's true. Nope, Jesse should be here shortly. I don't see an email. And Susan, that's really funny about December 29th. Somehow I know three people with the same birthday. Isn't it really fun when we meet people with the same birthday? I don't know why, but isn't it? It's kind of, I feel like it's a little bit related to, you know, that our favorite sound as human beings is the sound of our name. Did you know that? I don't know if it's true. Apparently studies show this, that we love the sound of our name. For example, there is a disproportionate number of Dennises who are dentists, which is interesting. It's kind of like the sound of our name so much. We choose a profession that we constantly hear the sound of our name. So I think it's kind of like when we meet someone with our birthday. It's like that spirit. And I see Jesse. Jesse, awesome. Hold on. I'm just going to spotlight you for everybody. Awesome. All right. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, Natalie. How are you?
I'm good. It's so good to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, I'm that person who says Happy New Year for the duration of January. I really love New Year. So
New Year is such a great opportunity. You know, it's like a constructed opportunity to start over on big things that you care about. I mean, it should be New Year pretty much every day.
Start. Yeah. No, I love New Year. And the other reason I'm a big New Year person. So in Russia, where I grew up, you may or may not know this if you have Russian friends, but New Year was it still is our big family holiday because religion was illegal. Mm. So you couldn't celebrate Hanukkah or Christmas or anything else. So we celebrate New Year's. So we still do it. We have a tree. It is not a Hanukkah bush. It is not a Christmas tree. It is a New Year tree. It is decorated. And you have a big family dinner and you give gifts, which I love giving gifts on New Year's because there's all these sales after Christmas.
Yeah.
There's even Father Frost, Ded Moroz, who comes and he really looks like Santa Claus, but he's not Santa Claus. And in Russia, he would come and in order to get your present, you would have to sing or do a poem. So it's much easier here.
I love that he had a unique likeness to Santa Claus but was not in fact Santa Claus.
Exactly. And this year it was funny, my dad was always my dad actually made some extra money dressing up as Ded Moroz, as Father Frost, for me and our friends. And then he did it here for my daughter until she caught on around 7 when he took off his white beard costume and took a sip of water, and I was like, Papa, what? And my daughter just stood there and was like, But this year, our 18-year-old daughter, Mia, surprised everyone, and she dressed up as Father Frost, which I just thought was the best thing.
Oh, but anyway, really wonderful.
It was awesome. Anyway, Jesse, I'm so grateful you are here. I when I was telling everyone what the topic was, I showed my copy of your book to everyone. And I just want to tell you up front, I'm about, I don't know, halfway to two-thirds of the way through. And the first thing I just want to tell you, as a, I don't know, fellow author, fellow human, what an incredible, I don't know, creation, Jesse. Like, I've read your writing throughout the years, for many years, but never in this form. It's really hard to put down. Like, I really mean that. It is really hard to put down. So
thank you.
And in fact, the way I want to dive into our conversation, I dog-eared your book. I always feel a little bit bad. I do it. I don't know. I want to read two short passages, and they're from the prologue. So just to give everyone a little bit of a sense, and then I'm going to ask you some questions. So if that's okay, I wanted to start.
I love that. I have to ask you, Natalie, I have a copy of my book.
Oh, good. Then I'm going to make you do it.
Well, no, don't, you do not need to do it, but I was thinking about putting it here. And then I thought that would be so silly. I would be, is it all right if I put it back there? Does it look
totally
like. It is
totally not silly, like, Jesse. Do you see the giant printout poster of the Awesome Human Project?
I saw that. It gave me confidence and courage. I was like, look, if Natalie can do this, I can do this too. I
yes,
can do
you
this.
Can. So, and
thank you.
Because it
thank
is a
you.
Really, really beautiful book. Okay. Well, I will,
please
I will
do.
Read because they're short and, I want you to actually, I think it's a, when people would read short passages from my book, it was kind of a gift, actually. So I'm going to read two short passages just to get us going and to give everyone a sense of kind of what we're talking about. All right. So this is all from the prologue, everyone. And again, the book is called The Family Outing. There will always be a link in your follow-up email to make sure that you grab your copy because you can't get mine. I'm attached. All right. We all came out of the closet and now we're okay. These things are correlated, but they're not causal. Coming out was an inevitability. For close to two decades, my family lived in the shadow of our closets. We lived with the pain that comes from hiding one's most authentic self and the pain that comes from being raised by people who are hiding their most authentic selves. It was a shame that began on the inside and spilled out of us. Disguising the shame took effort. It took thinking and planning and always being on the verge of being found out. It took lying and lying about the lies. It took our life force. Collectively, we reached a point where the hiding had robbed us of our oxygen. Something had to change or we would die. Then in the space of 5 years, like a chain reaction that couldn't be stopped once it had been set in motion, we each revealed our secrets, first to ourselves and then to everyone. I came out as a lesbian. Dad announced he was gay. Katya, is that how you say your sister's name?
Katya.
Katya told us she was bisexual. Evan found the courage to say he was transgender. And Mom found the voice to call herself a survivor of a series of crimes so reprehensible that I could only allow myself to learn about them in small doses over many years. And I'm going to just read one other really short part that I don't know. It just, when I read it, it really stayed with me. Independent of the details, we can all agree on this. We were broken. We broke one another. We hurt one another. Things seemed irreparable. And then we let go. This is when we grew. We became people who knew how to love and feel loved, people who loved themselves. And then probably we grew into a family again, a different kind of family, reflecting a new set of values. Every version of ourselves is okay in this family. Every mistake is embraced. Missteps are tolerated. We turn to one another in difficult moments. We delight in one another. I have goosebumps, Jesse, reading that part. I don't know. It's hard to see on Zoom, but I think it is so beautiful. So this is what your book is about. And as someone who's read two-thirds of it, I think the book is about love. And I think is a book about acceptance. And I would just love for you to talk a little bit about this experience of going from a place where you were all hiding and what that took to a place where you could get to this place of love and acceptance.
First of all, thank you, Natalie, for reading it. you're right. It's really profound to hear your work read by mm-hmm. somebody else. And it is profound to know that the work lands with anybody else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the big misinterpretation of my book is that it is a book about queerness coming out as mm-hmm. gay, when what it really aspires to be, and hopefully in its successful moments it is, it's a book about how you actually love the people that you are closest to, right? And family, whether you like them or whether you don't like them, whether you chose them and married them or whether you landed them, they are at once the people that you are probably physically in most proximity to, and just the hardest people to love, no matter how much you love them. And I wanted to explore like those very deep interpersonal relationships we have with each other. And so I want to go back to this idea, first of all, about coming out, right? Because the title, the family outing, it's about coming out. I don't think about coming out as actually related to being gay, or at least if it is, it's in like the largest sense of the word.
Yes.
Here's what I think is true about all people. And you are welcome to tell me that it is not true. I invite that. I think we're all born into a set of expectations that we don't choose for ourselves, right? Our parents, they look at us on the day that we're born and they want things for us, usually out of love. I want you to grow. I can imagine what your wedding will look like one day. I hope you're a baseball player just like me. I want you to be religious in this way. And inevitably, we grow in the world and we are not that person. We are not authentically in line with their expectations for us. And sometimes it's in small ways, like, oh, I'm not a baseball player. I love theater, actually. And it takes courage for you to find a way to say, like, I'm not actually ever going to go out for the Little League team. Sometimes the mismatch is deeply profound. Sometimes the ways in which you feel called to be yourself in the world are so different from what your family of origin, your community expects from you, that to find your way to find voice for those things is to rupture everything that you know to be true. It's terrifying. And certainly for most people, not all people who come out of the closet as queer, that's true. Like our, you know, and so that is sort of like the lens through which I started thinking about this remarkable thing about my family, which is that we're pretty gay. Like we're a very, very gay family.
Wait, before you go any further, Jesse, I just have to, that phrase that you said, we're born into a set of expectations. I think it's really powerful. I want to actually pause there because I know I went like this and I know everyone went like this, even though we can't see the 170 people who are with us live and many more who are watching later as a recording. And Amy just wrote, it's so powerful, because immediately, I think inevitably, I immediately went to a place of, yeah, like what I've done for the last 6 years in my life was in a way a coming out. I came out not as a high achiever business, you know, refugee that I was for 40 years, because that was the expectation. And I'm not just saying of my parents, as you said, community of origin. And I came out as this teacher of, you know, human connections and emotional fitness and happiness. And I'm sure everyone had that immediate, like, what are we all coming out as? So I just wanted to pause on that, because I think the way you said it was so profound. And for what it's worth, I just want to share with you, in case you haven't encountered it, something really powerful that I've encountered. I don't know if you've ever heard of the acorn theory.
No, share it with me.
I'll just share it briefly. I don't want to hijack the conversation, but the acorn theory says that we are essentially, and it comes all the way from Aristotle. The acorn is the modern, Aristotle called it the daemon, kind of our essence, our soul, our character, whatever is the comfortable word. And so we all are born with one. And the acorn theory says that that's our life purpose, is to grow into this beautiful oak tree. And it's not fate. And it's not predetermined. We make our own choices. And most of us, and I did for most of my life, actually don't listen to the acorn very much. And my shorthand is, I always say, I tried for most of my life as an acorn to become a really good tomato. I tried really, really hard. I did all the things. And then I had a breakdown, because an acorn can't become a tomato. The reason I mention it to you and everyone here is, One of the things that's part of this acorn idea is that when the acorn, that daemon, that soul, that essence comes down, it chooses its parents. Mm. And I wouldn't say I become an expert on it. I have studied the acorn theory a lot, but I just want to offer that because I think it's a very interesting way to think about this idea that we're born into a set of expectations, but actually we're choosing those people because in some way it's going to help us grow into that oak tree. And actually, I wonder your thoughts on that as your experience through going.
You're asking me to think about this in this like really expansive way. And I really appreciate it. So according to that framing, the things that I had to learn in this lifetime came from having the parents that I had. Mm. You know, I so deeply appreciate my parents that I would say I love that thinking. Mm. You know, sometimes, particularly if you're not through the book yet, Natalie, you haven't gotten to the happy ending, so to speak.
I haven't.
And so I don't know where you are in the book, but like toward the, you know, the first, you know, half of the book, the like there, you know, there's a portion where you're in my adolescence. And let me tell you, my adolescence didn't feel well. And by the way, I'm just going to guess that like more than half, maybe all of the participants in this conversation would raise their hand and say, you know what, my adolescence didn't feel well either.
I know,
either.
I was going to say, does like, anyone?
Yeah, right? And I tried to write authentically about that. And a lot of that was because my mother was in so much pain that she acted out that pain on me specifically. She really targeted me with it. And you read that part of the book, and I think it would be easy to say, well, you know, are you mad at your mother? Or are you angry that all of that happened? Or do you wish it were different? And the answer to all three of those questions is no. I'm not mad at my mother. I deeply understand the circumstances in which she lived her life and grew. And I'm not angry about all of this. Let's face it, I have done a lot of work, as have you, Natalie, right? I've done a lot of therapy and healing and growth, right? But also I'm not angry about it. And I do not wish that it had been different because it shaped me into who I get to be. And at this point in my life, I find such joy in getting to like come closer to acting out my purpose in the world and to like being my most authentic self. Mm. It couldn't have been possible without my parents. And it doesn't mean though that the parents that we get, that the family that we get are easy. Mm. So.
Yeah, I think that's an important piece, you know, and I'd wonder if you would just in the short time that we have, but and I chose the passages I did to give a little bit of the story, but if you would just talk a little bit about, I have to tell you, I read the chapters on your mom twice. Also, just for what it's worth, Ypsilanti is where she was. I don't know if you know, that was my first American home.
Nope.
When we landed, we had relatives in Ann Arbor, but we couldn't afford Ann Arbor. So we lived in the projects in Ypsilanti for 9 months. So it's for what it's worth. But if you would just talk a little bit about.
I would love to.
Yeah, I would love for everyone to have that grounding.
So I want to start by saying, like, why did this book come to be? Mm-hmm. And particularly, you know, folks in this conversation, I grew up as a business reporter, a technology reporter. If you wanted me to analyze the balance sheet of Goldman Sachs, I'd raise my hand and be like, I can talk publicly about that. If you wanted to know about Mark Zuckerberg and how he thought about social technology, I'm good on that. If you asked me to talk about feelings, and in particular, the ones related to my family, I would have kept my mouth shut. Mm. It was not my comfort zone. In March of 2020, when the pandemic happened, I was a relatively new parent living in Brooklyn, New York. And in New York City, the pandemic took an early terrifying hold. And it seemed like overnight, my wife and I were home by ourselves with a 15-month-old. We lived on the ground floor of this apartment building in Brooklyn that was on 7th Avenue. And it was like along the corridor to Methodist Hospital. And just all day I would hear the ambulances go by. And I was, like many people, scared. There was so much unknown. And so eventually my wife and I decided we needed to leave. And we put our baby and our dog in the back of the Subaru. And we drove 18 hours to our parents' home in Tupelo, Mississippi. And I am a progressive child of gays, middle-aged woman, if you asked me, hey, do you think that you're going to go live in your wife's childhood bedroom in Tupelo, Mississippi, the deep South? Ever before that in my life, I would have been like, no way. No, that is no way. No, that is a bad idea. But here I was doing just that. We went for 10 days. We stayed for many months. And during that period, I at first did what you did. I don't know if you had a period of this, Natalie, but I had Zoom cocktail parties and Zoom coffee hours and Zoom 40th birthday parties and Zoom trivia. And I was like getting out. And after like a week of that, every aspect of me was burnt out. And yeah. I found that I went like deeply internal and I was depressed and I was so sad. And I was really only in touch with four people, but I was in touch with them every day. And they were my family. They, you know, we were quarantining in five different houses in four different states. And yet every day I talked to or texted with my brother and my sister and my mother and my father. And I thought, well, gosh, this is really weird. Because if you had known us during the time when we were children in this household, you would think we would never talk again. Mm. Like, it was not a happy story in our household. I wonder how it is that we all found our way back to each other. And that in the face of this global emergency, we are the people we are turning to. Mm. So I pitched the idea. And the idea was this. I would like to try, I called it the project. I would like to try to tell the story of my family, to figure out how we all came apart and why we all came apart. And we did. There was a big rupture, not to give away the story. Mm. And then how we found our way back to each other. Mm. Because I think if you can trace the way that five people in a small family unit find their way back to each other, you can actually lay groundwork for how the world heals itself, how our democracy finds its way back to composition, like how we connect with each other. Mm. Haven't gotten to your question yet, Natalie.
That's okay. This is really, I don't know. I'm sure everyone listening has the same experience as you're talking. What you're doing is you're helping us, helping me think about that in my own life, right? And it might be, by the way, for me, it's not actually about my parents. Because I did that 6 years ago during another personal crisis, but it may be with friends or it may be with something else. But I think it's a really meaningful thing to talk about. So please.
So I started by thinking about, okay, well, so I basically sat down and interviewed each member of my family like they were somebody that I was writing about. And I said, tell me the story of our family. And, you know, with my parents, it started with, tell me why you married mom, why you married dad. Like, what were you hoping for? My parents were married for 23 years. You know, what was that marriage like? Why did it break? And I asked very open-ended questions, and I didn't assume that I knew the answers, which, Natalie, I'm just going to say that was hard for me because I'm an oldest child.
I was going to say that's really hard, especially for your analytically minded folks. Like, of course, I know the answer. I was there.
I am the expert on my family, but let's just pretend for one moment that I'm not. Let's hear what they have to say. So then you get these two adults, my parents, and they are products of the 20th century. Is anybody in the audience in this demographic, Natalie, where this is like north of 60 years old? You were a child and you grew up in the 20th century, in the middle of the 20th century. And, you know, my parents, each of their parents love them very much. But the values of that time held that you wanted to try to be like the dominant norm in culture. And if there was anything different about you, you should really keep that quiet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's start with my mom. My mom is a teenager in Ypsilanti, Michigan. She is like average in all of the best ways. Like, you know, she's pretty, but not pretty enough. She's not the prettiest girl in school. She's popular, but she's probably not the most popular girl in school. She's really likable. Everybody likes her. Mm. And she grows up, she's the daughter of a piano teacher and a high school wrestling coach. And it turns out that in Ypsilanti, Michigan, I guess this is not something you knew, Natalie, although I'm curious,
right? Not until I read the book.
In Ypsilanti, Michigan, did you then feel like you should Google it? Let me just ask.
Of course I did.
There was in the mid-60s a serial killer who emerged. Except let me take you back to the mid-60s. This was before the age of the collective cultural freak out about serial killers, when you didn't have a name for this yet, when you didn't know to identify this yet. There was simply somebody who was targeting a lot of the women in the community. And this was a small community. These were women that my mom knew. It was the church deacon at church's secretary. It was the assistant art teacher at our high school. These women were being brutally murdered, often raped. And, you know, you can look on the internet for more information. I don't need to tell you about it. But at first, like these crimes do, they started out fairly infrequent. You know, I think the first one happened when my mom was in 10th grade and seemed like a one-off. And then I think it was a full year before another one happened. But by the time my mom was a senior in high school, these crimes were happening every month and life no longer felt safe. And all of the dads in town had become volunteer policemen. And all of the young people in town had been given little jars of mace and been told not to go with people they don't know. There was a curfew in town for young women. And still women kept disappearing. So my mom, she's an adolescent against this backdrop. And she works at a place, it's like a local Montgomery Wards, which I think doesn't exist today, but it's just like a local department store. It's her summer job. And, you know, all of this is happening on the outside, but she's just trying to be a teenager.
Right.
And she develops a crush and, you know, kind of starts going with this guy who, this older guy who, as it turns out, not to spoil it for you, but he's involved in the murders.
Yeah.
And my mom discovers this in a horrific way. I won't give it up. And it's terrifying for her. And when her parents discover that she has somehow been involved with this person who is finally outed as being involved with the murders, and there is still an open question as to whether he is one of the murderers, they do what you did in the 20th century. They say, this is awful. Never talk to him again. Never talk about this again. This is embarrassing to our family. This is tragic for you. Let's just make it go away. And so my mom does that. She just stuffs it all deep down inside. Now put a pause on my mom for a second, Natalie, and go over to New York where my dad is a kid. He's growing up the son of a very conservative Methodist minister, so conservative that this Methodist minister does not feel like his family is getting enough church on Sundays. So on Wednesdays, he brings them across the street to the Baptist church for a little extra churching. That is how church focused they are. And my dad is the kid, and I see a few of you talking about your kids in the stream. So maybe this will resonate for you. Like, my dad is the kid who you look at him and you're like, ooh, I think that kid might be gay, right? Like he's got a like a very soft affect. And not to say that, by the way, like these things tell you about whether somebody is gay or not, but he's just like a young kid who even at 7 or 8 years old read as like gay. And my grandparents in the 50s and 60s, they want him to have a meaningful relationship with Christ, which does not include being gay.
Obviously.
And so they send him off to Christian boarding school. And he goes off to Christian boarding school and is raised never to have access to any image of anyone who is gay. He has no idea of what this is. He just feels kind of out of place in his own life and his own body. He grows up to become a missionary. That really, really, really doesn't work out. He finally goes to a therapist through a church and says, hey, you know, I'm wondering if maybe I'm gay. And the therapist says, no, you're not gay. You just need to get married. Mm. So at this point, my dad's living in Ypsilanti, Michigan with his sister who happens to be living there. And he's been told by the church therapist, you're not gay. You just need to get married. And so he looks around and says, who can I marry? And my mother sees the effeminate son of a minister going for a quiet family life and says, that guy seems safe.
I was going to say safety.
Right? And no surprise, that is the story of my family. And by the way, that's a long origin story. And it should be a long origin story because understanding how two adults got to the place where they were each other's answer is critical. And also, I would posit beautiful. Like they gave each other beautiful things in that time.
And I, Jesse, you know, as you were telling the story, I think as many people, I was thinking of my parents' origin story, which is like so different. But I think it, as you say, like the way that the way that our parents choose each other. And so for everyone here, I actually just want to say, if you don't know, my friend was over the other day, and this is a couple months ago, and my parents were over, we had dinner, and this is one of my best friends. And somehow we got to how my parents met. Super short is, my mom was engaged to be married to someone else. My dad was in the army in Russia. Army was compulsory service for 2 years, and he had a week off. And my mom and her parents lived in the South, warmer. This was the winter. So my dad's parents knew my mom's parents, and they would just send him south just to get any sunshine. You know, army is hard. So he comes, it was my mom's birthday. Her fiance is there. My dad came to the family just to be fed and get sun. They had 10 days together, by the end of which my mom broke off her engagement. They decided to get married. And then my dad went back to the army for a year. This is 1972. There is no email. There is no phone in Russia at the time. You do not call each other. So they wrote letters for a year. And then he came back to get married. She had to bring his sister to the airport because she forgot what he looked like. She didn't have a picture of him. And they've now been married 49 years. And it is the most epic union of sorts. But the reason I share this is, I think, and my friend was over and she was like, oh my God, I never knew that. And she said, I just realized I don't know exactly how my parents chose each other. So I feel like you sharing that is also an invitation to all of us, if we don't know, to maybe get to know. Because I think there's a lot of beauty, as you say, in that, but also there's some wisdom in that that may reflect some of the parenting ways we experienced and maybe other choices. Okay, so that's how your parents met.
I just wanted to say yes. I mean, I call this the project. I think everybody should do a project, right? Like, turn on the tape recorder, ask open-ended questions, and then just say, tell me more. Like, that should be your only line in the entire interview. Tell me more. Tell me more about that, Natalie.
Everyone, take notes, because Jesse is an incredible journalist and an incredible interviewer. And I said this when Jesse interviewed me when my book came out. It was my favorite interview, because Jesse is an incredible listener, but it's also, she asked these good questions. Tell me more. I love this idea that we should all do this project. And again, it doesn't have to be with your parents. It could be with a friend or a grandparent or a partner or someone you want to learn more about. I love the idea of doing this project, Jesse. I hate time in the world, because I would like to talk to you for 3 hours. But just to get us fast forward and talk a little bit about you and your two siblings.
Sure.
And then tell us about, I'd actually love to know about the coming out. And I know for some of you, it was voluntary, and for someone like your dad, it wasn't.
Well, so, you know, my parents were married, they raised us, and now I want to take you to, I like to say I was the first to come out. I'm somewhat proud of that, but in kind of a facetious way. I always knew I was gay. I get to school, I went to Brown University, which is actually very similar to where you went to school, liberal arts culture. I get there and I'm first introduced to really healthy role models for who LGBTQIA plus people are. And I'm like, oh, that's me. And I work my way out of the closet. It's not easy, but it's also not that interesting. It's like very straightforward. And I am on my way home from my first year of college in the car with my parents. And I'm like, Mom, Dad, I have something to tell you. I think that could be possibly, maybe I'm gay, you know? And in that moment, my mother starts bawling, crying. And she's like, oh, gosh, Jesse, I think your cousin's gay, because he just cries a lot. My cousin was 11 years old at the time. And also, he was a boy and he cried a lot. Those were just true things about him. Mm. But whatever. My mom then says what I consider to be exactly the right thing, which is, I love you so much. You don't understand this, but we'll figure it out. I love you. Mm, my dad says nothing, Natalie. Next day, I'm sitting at the breakfast bar in the kitchen, and my dad walks in and he pours himself this bowl of this god-awful cereal he used to eat. Sorry if you eat it in the audience, called Grape Nuts. Anyone remember that?
Oh my God, Jesse, I love Grape Nuts.
Well, you and my dad love Grape Nuts, okay? Okay.
Okay, we need to have a separate awesome human hour so you and I can talk about this. For the record, though, I do. I am Russian. We eat buckwheat. To me, it is the closest thing to buckwheat. If you offered me a piece of chocolate cake and a bowl of Grape Nuts with milk, Grape Nuts, 10 out of 10. Judge me, everybody. Jesse, you know.
Well, you're not the only one, because
I love Kari, sorry if I said your name wrong,
but Kari, Melissa, and Joanne, everybody loves Grape Nuts. So me, no, I don't know. Maybe it's this association.
Like, I love it. Are you in the Jesse No Grape Nuts camp or the Natalie and Jesse's dad Grape Nuts camp? I love it.
I mean, I, you know, my dad's a very healthy guy. So clearly it worked out for him. But in that moment, he said to me, he said, you know, I thought I was gay once too. And I was like, hold the phone. In that way that you are as a young person, when you finally, for the first time, realize that your parents are parents, yeah, but they're also people, right? And I'm like, well, what did you do? And he said, well, you know, you make choices in your life. And I married your mom. And then he walked out of the house and went to work. And I thought, oh, goodness, my dad's gay.
Wow.
That was like the first time I knew. But it was many years later. It was, you know, I'm the oldest of three kids. My sister is 4 years younger than me. My brother is 6 years younger than me. So about 4 years later, my sister is in college. And she's home from college for lots of other reasons that the book takes you through, hopefully in a way that like makes you want to read it and not be able to put it down. My parents are not in a great place in their marriage, but I'm planning to do anything about it. When my sister logs onto the computer to chat with her boyfriend, and up pops somebody that my father is having an affair with. And suddenly, like, the top is blown off his life and the entire family's life. And my sister confronts him. And he is basically kicked, like drop kicked out of the closet, not by his choice. Yeah. And what follows is within like a 2 year period after that, my dad comes out, which disrupts his marriage with my mom. And that is a mess. And then my sister comes out as bisexual. And then my brother calls us and tells us, you know, actually, when you see me next week, I think you're going to need to use the he, him pronouns. I, you know, was born female sexed, but I've realized I'm a man and I would like you to call me Evan. And throughout all of this, my mother is coming out as well. She is coming out for the first time as a survivor of this violence. Mm. And that's a lot of coming out. It is a very turbulent time in our family's history. But in, you know, with regard to time, like to fast forward to the point, why tell the story? Why explore that territory? Mm. Because it forced a kind of self-reflection that most people do not have forced upon them. Mm. Each of us in our own way had to find our way out of our closet, all at the same time, it turns out. And by doing that self-reflection, we were each given a path back toward each other. And that's really the second half of the book.
And I think, you know, I was thinking about this when I was reading it, and I'm thinking about this again as you're talking, but so many people, I'm sure you or your siblings or your parents, I, everyone here, we fear, right? That when we come out as whatever, for me, again, I just want to, I love that you, you know, you pointed out at the beginning, this term coming out has become associated with, you know, I'm coming out as gay or lesbian. But I talked about in my first book, Happier Now, that I was coming out with this book as this is the stuff I'm going to do with the rest of my life. And I felt like I was uprooting myself, and I felt like it was not just rebelling, I thought I was rejecting my family. And so there's a lot of fear, right, for all of us about coming out as our true selves. I hear about this and experience it all the time. And yet, as you were just talking, and again, as I was reading the book, I kept coming back to that is actually the only way to have these really meaningful relationships with people we love. The thing that we fear, like we think that our parents want us to be a certain way, or people in our life want us to be a certain way, or my audience on stage wants me to be a certain way. But actually, the only way that I can enter into that meaningful relationship, whether it's for an hour or a lifetime, is by being true to myself. Would you? And I think that's really meaningful and scary and beautiful.
Exactly that. And I would add two quick things. One is that you don't come out once. You are always coming out. Mm. And just when you finally get your feet on something that feels like solid ground around one aspect of your identity, some new part of yourself reveals itself. And so the work in life is to be okay with that change, to be okay with always coming out. And then, you know, what I am interested in more than you coming out, Natalie, is how I hear you, right? Mm. I am interested in what we can give to each other through this process. Very early on in this conversation, I would need to scroll up to see who it was. Somebody was talking about their children and what they want for their children. It might've been Deborah or Laura. And one thing we're really, really bad at is when the people who we love the most come out to us knowing what to say. And I say we, because I am bad at that too. You know, my brother comes out 7 years after I came out as gay. He calls me up and he says, I'm trans, use the male pronouns. And my first answer to him is, oh, no, you're not. I just saw you at Christmas. You were wearing a dress. Right. Like, oh, no, you're not. And this is like a great disservice that we all do to each other. And it's understandable. We have to have self-compassion. Like when somebody that you are really close to reveals some aspect of themselves that you didn't know about, it shakes the foundation of how you see yourself. Mm. And so your first response is always going to be like, oh, that's not true. And I wonder what happens if you don't have to jump right to, oh, that is true and I get it. But what happens if we just say, oh, tell me more about that? Mm.
I think that's so powerful, Jesse. And, you know, there's even in the smallest way, right? Like I'm watching this with my daughter and we have a very open, close relationship, but she's in college. And so a lot of her, and she's our only, so we've just gone from being this tight unit where, and now she's on her own. It's even the small things, right? But you're so right. It's that response. And our first response is, like you said, it's from fear, because all of a sudden our safe world, the world we understand, is no longer the same. And we go to fear. The human brain immediately goes to fear of any change. We go, no, 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 no. And I think it's such a great, I don't know, such a great life task to respond in that moment that is in a way that is both compassionate and self-compassionate, right? Because it would be a lie if we just went, oh yeah, that's awesome, for something that doesn't feel awesome. That would be another lie too, right? Yeah. So how can we do it in a way that is gives that person, but you're so right. I love that the way you put that. And I do think I'm taking that on as one of my life projects, is to find a way to respond in a way that is understanding, but also self-compassionate. I think that's the hard thing.
Crystal asked a great question. It's just worth like landing on it a second, which Please. Is like, how can you say, tell me more, without sounding like a therapist? And she's right. Like I sound like a therapist when I say, tell me more. And we all know that like the language that exists in our intimate relationships can't feel forced, or we feel like we're not authentically who we are. And also, Crystal, I don't have a good answer for you, right? Like only you know the language that works in an interpersonal relationship. And it is so challenging, particularly to get our children to open up to us, to actually tell us what's going on with them.
Yeah. Well, I love that you brought that up, Jesse. I was going to ask you the question. So just to share, and we had a really incredible person on a couple weeks ago. So you can scroll back, and it's a podcast episode on listening. And he is a psychologist. He's an expert on listening. He's written the best-selling book on listening. And he actually did a whole segment, Jesse, you might want to listen, because he did a whole segment about how to get kids to talk about painful things. Mm-hmm. So I just share this as a resource. But you know, something interesting that it just came to me as we're talking about this, like your dad was pouring himself cereal, you were at the kitchen counter, and he had this moment with you of openness. Just to share a lot of what I've found with Mia, my daughter, who I talk about her a lot, is it's never when we sit down and I'm like, tell me about your life or tell me about your day. That's very like interview, you know, it's always in those little in between moments of just being together, doing something else. And so Crystal and everyone, I can just share what I do. So she's 18 now, but I've done this for a while. When she says something that I feel like, okay, we want to explore that more, tell me more. As Jesse said, that's not my vibe, so I wouldn't say that. Like, don't say anything that does, I don't talk like that. But I kind of pause and I still do this. And then I go, huh, so that's interesting. Or that's cool. And then I just pause. And that's my way to say, tell me more, because I don't then insert. So I guess what I'm saying, Jesse, one thing I found is one way to say, tell me more, without saying, tell me more, is to not inject your opinion immediately, right? So, or to fix something. So even in small things, right? Like, you know, your kids are little, but they're growing, and it's like, Mia would come home from school and she would look sad. And I'd be like, oh my God, baby, what happened? And like, she doesn't want to say. And immediately as a parent, what do you want to do? You want to make them feel better out of love, you want to fix it. So you start fixing and have a snack and let's cheer up. And in that, I've just negated her ability to tell me what's wrong. And I did this all the time. I just want to say this until I had my own experience. So I think it's that, whether it's something really big, tell me more, or it's, I'm sad. And if tell me more is not your thing, then it's like, you know, have an apple together and just space. I think leaving that space is, and that's what you're inviting us to do, that space that the person can fill.
Yeah, that's really true. It's funny, it's a journalistic technique, right? Like if you're interviewing somebody, the very best way to get somebody to volunteer information is to create silence, because we as humans cannot manage silence. It makes us so uncomfortable that eventually someone will volunteer information.
Yeah, I think that's a really great thing. I want to ask you a question that we can, I want to ask you 1,000 more questions, but we're at time. I want to be respectful of your time and everyone else in this amazing conversation. What would your advice be to someone who might be listening, who has something that they're inspired by listening to you that they do want to share with their close ones, however big or small it is, but there's that fear. What do you have words?
Well, first of all, I want to start by saying, just acknowledging that it's not always safe to share, right? Mm. And it's important to acknowledge that. And in particularly for LGBTQIA people, you know your circumstances best, you know your family best, you know your community best, and we live in a moment where like safety is receding instead of growing. Separate from that, the people in your life will surprise you in ways that you cannot expect, and everything is a journey. And if you're wrestling with the fear, you're in exactly the right place. Don't walk away from the fear, walk into the fear, because there's something there for you.
I think that's really beautiful. Jesse, thank you for you. I'm immensely grateful for you and everything that you share and give, and for this treasure. Everyone, again, you can't have this copy, but you can order your own. It's called The Family Outing. It's on all the places you buy books, and the link will be in your follow-up email if you registered on Zoom. And of course, we'll put it in the podcast notes as well. Jesse, thank you for making time and for sharing so warmly and with such, I don't know, depth of wisdom and beauty is the best way that I can put it. This was a gift, as you can see by the exploding chat and comments. And thank you to everyone who was part of this conversation for your deep listening and for your openness. And as I always say, thank you for being, and thank you for being here. I think this is such an important way to begin the new year. I said that, Jesse, before you joined, to begin in a place of kind of going within and thinking about ways that we can be more true to ourselves, and then thinking about the impact of that in our relationships. And as you invited us, how we can be there in the most loving way for people when they share a bit of themselves. So thank you. Thank you, everyone. Again, you'll get a follow-up email with all the links. I know people have already pinged me. They're ordering your book. And as a reminder, I will see you guys next week for a bonus episode of Awesome Human Hour, where I will walk you through creating your mini self-care plan for the year. So January 11th. Thank you, everyone. Jesse, thank you so much.
Such a gift. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year. Happy New Year, everyone. All right, awesome humans. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Awesome Human Podcast. And I would love to know what resonated. What questions do you have? What are you excited to practice? So send us an email to team@happier.com. And please rest assured, if you send an email that you'd love for me to read, I will always get it in my inbox. My team will send it to me. Let's stay in touch so you can keep practicing skills to help you struggle less and thrive more in work and life. The best way to do it is to go to happier.com and subscribe to my weekly newsletter. I promise you, I would never send you spam. It's just more practices, skills, and stories to help you embrace your inner awesome human. I can't wait to see you next week.